Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to the Life Enthusiast Co-op Online Radio Network, restoring vitality to you and the planet. And we're particularly concerned this week with the planet. I'm your co-host, Scott Patton, along with the founder of the Life Enthusiast Co-op, Martin Patella. Hey, Martin, when the lights go out and you look at your hand and it's pitch black, are you glowing?
I'm trying my best not to look.
So the Japanese reactor, we're still having problems, and what's really interesting, and one of the reasons why we wanted to talk about this, was the fact that the news has gone quite quiet on this. In fact, it was interesting because I was listening to a talk radio host in my local area, and he was talking about what was going on in Japan, and he even said, I'm really concerned that because everyone knows that the general populace, you know, kind of focuses on one thing for 5 minutes and then focuses on something else, and what it focuses on in the beginning is sort of forgotten. And he actually said, I'm really concerned that the attention of everybody has moved away from what's happening in Japan and onto something else, whether it's the uprising in Libya and Syria and all the things that are going on in the Middle East, or it's the fact that the U.S. government was almost shut down because of budget problems between the president and the Congress, or you name it, whatever's going on in your local area. And unfortunately, because our mission is to restore vitality, we see some real problems that people need to take action on, because regardless of what's happening, this is not a short-term problem. What's been created in Japan is now a long-term problem. And just to give a quick example of that is they did a study of ocean currents and everything, because when the tidal wave hit Japan, of course, it washed a lot of stuff, including whole buildings, out to sea. And they say that all that debris will probably hit Hawaii in 6, 8, 10 months, and then it's going to hit the west coast of North America within 3 years. And as it goes through that process of going across, it also then comes back and it's going to hit Hawaii a second time. So I feel for our Hawaiian friends, but everyone on the west coast is going to be getting a lot of this debris coming over in 3 years from now, right? And that's not talking about the air that's coming either. So
which is it, the beachcomber heaven or gift from hell?
Yeah, that's right.
And this is quite interesting. You know, the unpleasant thing that's going on right now is that they apparently have lost control over these reactors. They will not be able to bring them back to function. This is now essentially a dead zone, and they will have to entomb them, you know, essentially encase them in so much concrete and lead and who knows what else, so as for the radiation not to escape. Essentially the same treatments that the Chernobyl reactor got back in 1986. Because it's guaranteed that the fuel, the rods, will be glowing at least for another 100 years.
So, at least, yeah.
Yeah, so that's a given. So you need to somehow contain it, and it appears that's the controlled containment, where you cool it with water and you have sort of the managed situation, that's over. You're just going to have to sort of build a pyramid over top of it and hope that it will never bust through.
That's right.
But what's already happened, what's already happened is significant, is the cooling water that they have been dumping on it has been washing out into the sea.
So basically what you have is you're pouring water on it, the water is picking up a lot of these heavy metals, and then it's taking that out to sea. Mm-hmm. And so what's going to happen out at sea?
Well, you have these various elements. You know, the volatile one is the iodine-131. That's the one that we have been really worried about, because if you ingest that in significant quantity, it will take out your thyroid, which will take out your metabolism, and that's pretty terminal. But the iodine-131 has a half-life of 8 days. So if it takes 16 days to reach you, only quarter of it is active. so it falls off significantly with time.
So the iodine scare that we were talking about a week or two ago is not as significant, like the whole iodine thing isn't as significant as other issues that are coming out of this.
Well, it may still become a hot potato if something blows up.
You know, right.
We don't know. I mean, no news is really a concern because they're
well,
not
usually that means that they don't want us to know what's really going on, right?
Yeah, that's the assumption, you know. If they're hiding something, they're hiding the bad thing. They're not hiding the good thing. They'd be glowing about it.
Yeah. And elevated levels of radiation have already turned up in raw milk, seawater, and 11 kinds of vegetables, including broccoli, cauliflower, and turnips, in Japan.
Right.
Tap water in several areas of Japan, including Tokyo, also show radiation levels considered unsafe for infants.
Right.
Which
so,
that was
so what you have now is essentially it's getting into the environment, which means it's getting into the food chain. So
yes.
if you visualize the ocean, you know, it gets into the water. The plants and the plankton that use the water for its inhale exhale kind of life process will clearly pick it up. So first it goes into the plankton, then whatever eats the plankton gets it next. So the crustaceans pick it up from there. Whatever eats the crustaceans picks it up from them. And then the small fish get eaten by the bigger fish, and the bigger fish, and so on, right? So by the time we catch the salmon or the tuna or something like that, it's been concentrated significantly.
Right.
And that's
and then
why
you start
we
start eating it.
Yeah, well, that's why we have in the past had these issues with tuna, because tuna is at the top of the food chain. That's the most concentration, and we were not eating tuna because of mercury.
Right.
Well, guess what? The radioactive stuff, like, for instance, a one-quarter micron, that's microgram, of plutonium will give you cancer. Now, a quarter of a millionth of a gram is probably smaller than a droplet of your sneeze, you know?
Yeah, it's,
I mean,
pretty
it's
insignificant.
Nothing. Right. So if that much plutonium gives a human cancer, you know, and yes, one of those reactors, the number 3, was a blend of uranium and plutonium. But even if it's just the uranium, or if it's the other unpleasant things like the strontium or cesium, those things are getting out there. That's a given. So my own policy is get it out. Don't keep it in the body. I mean, I've had this intimate experience with getting heavy metals out of my body because of the mercury. Well, I certainly will now stay on a lifelong, however many days I have left, program of heavy metal detoxification. That's it. I'm not getting off of it anymore. Because I know, I'm convinced, that it will be in my food. You know, it's in getting into the food chain. It's given.
Right, and even if we don't have huge, you put your Geiger counter outside, it's not significantly higher background radiation than it was before, but we've got this radioactive dust that's coming over from Japan because of the winds. It settles down, gets into the rain, goes on to into the water
soil.
Table goes into the soil, and then it gets sucked up by the root system of the plants into the plants, and then next thing you know, we've got it, right?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it will take a year or two or three or five, but it will definitely be drifting through the food chain. That's what I'm talking about.
And some of these radioactive nuclides, such as strontium-90, they act like calcium and are stored in the bones. So
yes.
One of the problems that we could have when that happens is all of a sudden you've got this radioactive material that's part of your bone structure, and
mm-hmm.
that's going to be creating bone cancers, especially in young children.
That's correct, yes. Yeah, your body cannot tell one isotope from another. It grabs whatever looks correct. And yes, it's sort of like the the crow finding a happy, shiny object to bring it into the nest, right?
Right, except that this nice, shiny object is one that's going to kill its babies.
Yes, that's right.
So what we need to do is we need to step up our prevention, because this is something that tomorrow there's not going to be a rise in cancer incidents or other illnesses that could be related. Next year probably won't be, but in 10, 15 years we're going to see this spike, and we're all going to be wondering, like, you know, where did that come from, right?
Right. Well, you know, I have read some statistics that show that the areas downwind from Chernobyl have seen an extra 1 million deaths as from cancers, as the background statistics would suggest. So, you know, 1 million people in a population of 100 million, that's really nothing much, you know, that's 1%, right? But so 1 in 100 died a premature death thanks to the radiation put out there. It's not big. I mean, it's certainly a less risk than picking up smoking again if you quit.
Okay, well, I wasn't going to bring this up because we were talking about Japan and everything else, but I was planning in the near future to just throw this lung cancer study that I found at you, and since you brought up smoking, 20% of lung cancer patients keep smoking. They did a study, and they found that nearly 1 in 5 recently diagnosed lung cancer patients continue to light up, and they don't stop. And
well, the problem is the addiction, right?
Yeah, and fatalism. It's the belief that it is too late. You know, if I quit smoking, I'm not going to get better, so why bother to quit smoking?
Right, yeah, may as well enjoy my last few days.
That's the sort of thing that's
going right.
on.
Well, that's how I feel about tuna. I enjoy sushi. I continue to eat tuna sushi despite the mercury threat, but I also take my heavy metal detox every day.
Right, right. So you had mentioned plutonium, getting back to the Japanese nuclear plants and everything else, and they have found plutonium in the soils in a number of places around the plant.
Yes.
And, of course, what they've said is plutonium found at this time is at a similar level seen in soil in a regular environment. It is not at a level that is harmful to human health. And I'm kind of going, like, I'm not aware of plutonium glowing in my backyard.
Right.
And is any level of plutonium considered safe?
Well, you know, your body constantly battles radiation. In fact, there is a particular medical modality called radiation hormesis, where you intentionally expose yourself to a bit of radiation so that your immune system gets activated and deals with something. You know, there are other therapies that use irritation as a tool to deal with a lagging recovery. You know, one of the therapies is called prolotherapy, where you specifically inject an irritant into a body part that's not healing fast enough, and it will cause cause your immune system to go out there and heal that specific part that the therapist has irritated. So going into the general, yes, we are designed for this dynamic balance. You know, we do always ingest some toxicity, and our body is designed to deal with some of it. What it's not designed to deal with is ingestion of really heavy metals, such as cesium or uranium or plutonium or mercury, which we discussed ad nauseum.
Right, right. Well, so let's talk a little bit more about the zeolite, because, you know, what I think what we've sort of done right now is we've painted a pretty gloomy picture of the next 20 years, where we're going to have additional pressure on our bodies in terms of our health because of the radiation, because of the debris that's been spewed out into the air, the toxic heavy metals, which in addition to the radiation and all the rest of it. And so it's easy to say, well, you know, be like the cigarette smoker who finds out he's got cancer. It's like, well, too late to do anything about it now. But yep. we're at a point where that's not the case. It's not too late. We can do something about it. So you've mentioned zeolite a few times now. What is zeolite and how can it help?
Zeolite is a form of volcanic material, a clay. It actually is formed when a volcano erupts right at the seashore or even underwater. And this magma reacts or interacts with seawater, and this particular material is created. It's called clinoptilolite, and it's has an internal structure, a latticework, that maintains itself in an electronegative state while attracting electropositive.
Okay, so an electronegative state, what does that mean?
Well, you know, electropositive things are those such as, say, the lead or the uranium or other minerals that have, you know, the plus sign, plus or plus plus, you know, like Ca plus plus. Calcium is a double, is missing two electrons. It's looking for, it's looking for two electrons. You know, when you have the pluses, that's looking for an electron. So it's sucking in electron donors. Vitamin C, for instance, is an electron donor in your body. So when your body is running an electron deficit, it's electropositive, and it's needing to be quenched with electronegative stuff. How do I best say it? Well, you know, if you are exposed to positively ionized air, which is what happens in most indoor spaces, especially offices, especially where there are nylon carpets that put out static electricity and all of that, that the typical moods of people are tense, stressed, irritable, that sort of thing, which is the opposite of what happens in a forest where there's an abundance of negative ions in the air. You feel relaxed, calmed, joyful, you know, that sort of thing.
Yep.
So that's from the outside, and you're inhaling it and interacting with it. When this happens on the inside, you become imbalanced, and you go into oxidative stress, which the long-term effect of oxidative stress is aging. Wrinkles, shrinkage, hardening, cross-linking. If you visualize the difference between a person who has had a hard life, you know, a lot of smoking, drinking, something, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know, if you see a 55-year-old who's done things mostly right and took good care of themselves versus a 55-year-old who ate a lot of the wrong kind of food and drank, smoke, and all of that, you will see it on them. It will be totally obvious.
Okay, so let's just tie this back to Japan. What we have is we have a huge amount of heavy toxic metals spewed into the environment. We've got even probably more spewed into the ocean. We've got this stuff going up the food chain in the ocean, so that we're probably going to have glow-in-the-dark tuna in 3 or 4 years. Plus, when it rains and the wind pushes it or wherever it pushes, it's going to be into the soil. And so we've got all this strontium and plutonium and oxonium and all these other oniums coming into our body that we don't want. And they come in as a very, they have a charge on them. Our body says, well, the only way we can protect it is to store it in the bones, store it in the fat or whatever, so we can look forward to more cancer and everything else coming forward. And what you're saying is that if you get a substance that neutralizes the charge or is able to pull out the toxic metals, because our body doesn't, it has no experience. There never used to be plutonium in carrots. So 10,000 years ago or whenever we started eating carrots, our body was never had to worry about it, but now it might be in there, might be in the milk, all these things. It says, I don't know what to do with it. It sticks it somewhere. So the zeolite, what it does is it pulls it out, kind of The way I think of it, because the way this is the image I got from you, is it kind of it pulls it out and then it like wraps it in a protective container so that our liver and our kidneys and whatever can remove it from the body, because without that kind of protective coating, those cleansing organisms just look at it and freak out and send it back, right? Because
yes, it's so toxic. Yeah, the best image I can come up with is a hot piece of charcoal that just came off of your barbecue.
Right.
You know, I mean, if it's still glowing red, nobody wants to touch it, right? So you need to toss it back and forth. You can allow short-term contact, but not long, right? So you're tossing
Martin,
it around. Go ahead.
I have to confess. I have to tell you that before I knew better, I was a mean man, and I was at a barbecue near a beach, and I was cooking up some, it was chicken or something like that, right? And it was hot, and I had this little piece of chicken, and there were seagulls all over the place, really ticking me off.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
What I did was I just took one of these pieces of meat right off the grill, threw it out. And the seagulls went after it, and the first one grabbed it, was so happy, it started flying out, and then its mouth, of course, started to burn, and it opened its mouth and dropped it. And then the next one did. And I watched for about 10 minutes laughing at these seagulls. But that's kind of the image of what you're talking about, right?
I don't want it.
And then, of course, if we had an oven mitt, we could grab that heart charcoal,
right.
Probably no problem, and put it where we want to put it.
Yes, that's the whole thing. So with the zeolite has these electronegative pockets within itself, so it's sort of like you can swallow a hand grenade and hold it, right?
Right.
Or the hot, glowing, heavy metal that otherwise would just continue to simply extinguish your antioxidants. You know, there's no way that a molecule of vitamin C can compete with a molecule of uranium, because
right.
You will discharge the vitamin C and not change the uranium. And that's what really happened. It's sort of like a futile, you know, like these little fighters that are throwing themselves at the wall, right? And no chance of success. They just simply keep attacking, but the only thing that ever happens to them is they die. So
right.
Zeolite to the rescue. It actually contains this troublemaker and allows your body to safely escort it out.
Cool. So let's talk about some of the different brands of zeolite that you've got, because I think there's different, you know, and because how much do I take? What do I
right,
do?
Right. Yes. So, yeah. There has been a lot of finger pointing in the zeolite industry. You know, number one, zeolite. You could have clean zeolite and dirty zeolite. You know, zeolite will essentially grab and hold the toxins. So if you are using zeolite that's already semi-dirty, its effectiveness will be low. You know, like if it's let's just say that, this is a theory, but let's just say that a gram of zeolite has 1,000 spots in which it can hold something electropositive, and it's already dirty, it only has 60 spots open out of the 1,000 that it originally has available. Okay, it will take up the next 60 on its way through, but it's not terribly effective. So it may be cheap, but it may not deliver a good job. And indeed, zeolite has been used in Europe. I mean, it's been used by the 100,000 tons. I think 500,000 tons of zeolite was dumped in rivers and on fields and all around the reactor in an attempt to deal with these things. I mean, the Dnieper River, you know, the big river in Ukraine that was affected by this, they had actually built zeolite trap filters through which they ran the river water so as to clean it out.
Wow.
So you can go big, large scale. Zeolite is not expensive, you know. It's it's used in industrial spills, and it was used in this nuclear accident. I expect that it will be used in Japan in large quantities. For humans, what you're hoping to ingest is something that's fairly clean, so that it has high effectiveness. Otherwise, you'll be needing to use large doses. The other issue is, should you take it as powder or should you take it as liquid? Well, the only issue is the particle size. You know, if you mill it fine enough, it will suspend in water. So taking it in water is okay. If it's served to you in water, you probably have to pay more for it, but it's more convenient to take.
Right. Well, just to give an example of how, because first of all, how powerful zeolite is in doing this work, and how people have used it. And the reason I want to bring this up is, before talking with you, I'd never heard of zeolite before, right?
Uh-huh. Yes.
And so, in Chernobyl, for example, we don't have all the details, but from the published data, it seems to indicate that about 500,000 tons of zeolite were utilized to deal with the Chernobyl nuclear disaster. So yes. After the disaster, it was mixed into the feed supply of dairy cattle to reduce the radiation in the milk produced. Children yes. in the areas around Chernobyl were fed chocolate and biscuits that were formulated with zeolite and had zeolite-based liquids administered to assist in the removal of radionuclides from their bodies. It was yes. also incorporated in the cement blend that was utilized to cap the damaged Chernobyl reactor.
Uh-huh.
And the same or similar procedures are probably going to be deployed in Japan.
Yes.
So,
well, and you're describing it well. Those are indeed the data that's out there. So when we're saying, should I take liquid zeolite or should I take powdered zeolite? Well, if you look into our shopping cart, you can buy a pound, 16 ounces of zeolite in powder, for $60, or you can buy an ounce of liquid zeolite with some additional supplements for $25. So
this is pretty it's pretty inexpensive protection. It's very
yes.
effective protection.
Yes.
When
you can
buy
bake cookies with it, huh? You can buy that powdered stuff.
Oh, yeah, but what does it taste like, Martin? I mean, it's probably like that Dr. Buckley's.
No, nothing like it. It's chalk-like. It's totally tasteless. It's inert.
It doesn't have a bad aftertaste or
no.
Makes you smell or.
No, the opposite.
Now, can you take too much?
I suppose. I mean, my own
like
reaction,
like anything else, right? You could drink too much water, but
yeah. My own reaction to taking too much was that I was so tired that I had to take a nap in the afternoon.
So let's suppose I get the ultra liquid zeolite. It's an ounce for $25.
Right.
How long would that last me? Would that be like so?
Well,
how much would you use? Is that was as
well?
You know,
if you have. A condition that forces you to take it.
Well, let's just pretend we're fine and we've got radiation all over the place, right? From Japan.
Yeah, I would take about half the bottle a month.
Okay, so we're talking about a 2-month supply.
Yes.
And then just being aware of how we're feeling and everything else, deciding if we want to up that or
mm-hmm.
or push back on it. Okay.
Well, you know, if you're getting a condition that's associated with that, which is, you know, cancer is the most common thing you're going to get as a long-term side effect of heavy metal toxicity in the radioactive spectrum. Well, then you would just go for it, right? You take 6 bottles a month for 3 months. I mean, laugh at the cost. That's about $125 because we get discounted a month.
Okay.
Compare it to with the 10, 12, 20,000 for chemotherapy.
Right. Okay, so that's the liquid one. And then we've got the powdered one, which is zeolite pure,
yes.
440 grams. And I have to say that that's the one I'm using right now.
Uh-huh.
And it is, I mix it in with my cereal. It's totally tasteless. It makes the milk kind of look gray, but other than that, it's fine. And, so it comes with a little scoop, so 1 scoop a day, 2 scoops a day,
Yeah, one scoop a day is plenty. You could probably, you know, while we are living under the threat, one scoop a day, okay. But you could probably take half that and be still fine.
Okay. So now, just to compare it again with, you were talking about someone who's maybe got cancer or concerned, you know, lots of heavy metals, all that sort of stuff, and you said like 6 bottles in a month for the liquid zeolite, what would be the equivalent of the powder?
You would probably use up the whole pound in a month.
Holy smokes. Yeah, and I'm talking for someone who has it, right? Like, I don't know how I could...
Well, you throw it in the salad, you mix it into a smoothie, you know, like you just simply throw it into everything.
Yeah.
It's not that hard.
It's, you just don't want to do it spoonful by spoonful.
No.
It really is chalky.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
But look at it. I mean, they baked cookies and fed it to
children
in the Ukraine.
In Chernobyl, that's right. So I don't know how many scoops there are in the zeolite pure, but I've been going for about 2 weeks and taking almost a scoop a day because I'll miss the odd day.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like I've made a dent in it.
It's a phenomenal value, don't you think?
It is, for $60, amazing. And so we've got, I know we're coming close to the end of the time that we have, but I noticed when I went to the zeolite page that you've got...
other formulas?
Other formulas. And the one that we haven't really talked about before that looks new to me, and I could be wrong, is Zeo Health's Destroxin.
Yeah, destruction. It's a play on the word of destroying toxins. And
okay.
And, you know, we have the zeolite AV, which is the antiviral, and destruction. And the AV is mixed with humic acid, which is really effective at getting the stuff pulled out of your digestive system. And the destruction is mixed with vitamin B12, which is really good for tired people.
Oh, okay, cool.
So if you're suffering from chronic B12 deficiency, and most people over 40 years of age are, then that's a lovely way of getting some B12 into you while cleaning up. So especially people with chronic fatigue, for instance, is a classic problem of being toxic and also having low energy, right? So it would be very much recommended for that.
Cool, great. So if somebody wanted to, you know, do a little bit of their own research, find out some more information about the zeolite products that Life Enthusiast Co-op has available for them, what should they do, Martin?
Oh, life-enthusiast.com. Look at products, find supplements, zeolite, ZEOLITE. Or just call. We're at 1-866-543-3388. We're sitting here waiting for your call. Working on restoring vitality to you and to the planet, especially today.
Thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll see you next time.